Today is April 24th, 2013, and this is episode number 201 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, caffeinated commentator. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to question or comment, I do every time, don't I? And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
To be fair, Brian, we've only done 200 shows so far. So the fact that that you stumble through that on a semi-regular basis,
yeah.
Well, I mean, that's to be expected. It takes time. Baby steps.
Yes, baby steps.
Yeah. Is that helping at all?
No.
Well, that's kind of what I thought. Sorry.
I'm still a noob.
Yeah.
Didn't change anything.
Yeah. But episode 201.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. Congratulations.
Congratulations to both of us.
Yeah. Everybody was really, really nice about our extended length episode from last week with all the guests.
Yeah. So thank you for being patient with us, everyone. You guys rock.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate it. We do appreciate it. We won't be going long this week, but we will be talking about Apple's earnings report and conference call with analysts from yesterday, Tuesday.
Oh, right. That thing happened. Apple, blah, 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 money, blah, blah, blah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to...
Hold on. I think we should probably actually talk about these things.
I thought I just wrapped it up real nice, but that's okay. We can talk more if you'd like.
Yeah, we probably should.
All right. So, what do you want to start with?
Let's start with guidance. Guidance and results. Why don't we actually look at that?
Okay. So, the quick overview is guidance was kind of soft.
Guidance was very soft. Apple guided for the June quarter. Apple only guides for the next quarter. That has been their policy for a very long time. And that guidance was effectively flat year over year.
Right. And considering Apple's track record for guidance, that's a little surprising. Although we do have to take into account that Apple is switching away from the Scotty principle for guidance.
Right, yeah. That Scotty principle is definitely being nice. From Apple abandoned its sandbagging policy last quarter.
Yes. So their guidance this quarter, on one hand, you know, we can look at it and go, ooh, wow, that's kind of down. But on the other hand, we don't have a good track record to go with this new, kinder, gentler guidance yet.
Yeah, so Apple ended up beating its own guidance for this quarter, but not by much, which, again, is what it should. They actually had higher revenues of $42.49 billion with earnings per share of $10.07. And that compares to last year, $39.2 billion, with earnings per share of, I think, $12.02. I actually don't have that in front of me right now. So they guided, profits were lower than last year, but revenues were higher than last year. And but in both cases, they beat both their own guidance and expectations.
That's true. And beating their guidance last year, well, that's what we expect. Beating it this time means that they probably did actually do better than they genuinely expected they would. Well, of course, they also may be getting better at, or they need to kind of dial in the more realistic guidance.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the reality is that Apple still wants to and needs to beat its own guidance when it can. At the very least, it needs to be at the high end of its own guidance.
Sure.
if they come in at the low end of their own guidance all the time, that will not help the stock. That won't help. You know, Wall Street won't be pleased with that. So,
and Wall Street is a fickle bunch.
Yes, Wall Street is a fickle bunch for sure. So that guidance that Apple gave for the June quarter would represent, if they hit it, it would basically represent a flat quarter year over year. And Apple hasn't had flat quarters year over year. As a matter of fact, I believe this is the first time in 10 years when they haven't beat profits from the year ago quarter.
Right. It was actually down a little bit, as I recall, because it was, what, $9.5 billion?
Yeah, it was down. It was down significantly, but it was above expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that did not have a good impact on Apple's stock. Apple stock was up at first in after hours trading, and then it gave up. Is up at one point, it was up $20, several percentage points. But it gave up those gains by the end of the day, or by the end of the after hours trading session. Actually, what am I saying? By the end of Apple's own conference call.
Yeah, it was already going back down. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and today the stock opened up, it opened up in the red, traded in positive territory throughout most of the afternoon. Right now, I think it just dipped negative again. The point is that investors did not take Apple's results or the conference call or its own guidance as a sign of short-term growth, and the stock didn't get a boost.
No, it didn't. And I think part of what's playing into that, coupled with the guidance for excuse me, a softer quarter, is that we still don't have new products.
Right.
And probably won't.
Probably won't until the fall. Now, so Tim Cook said something to the did you end up writing this up for us about the expecting things in the fall?
Yes.
So what did he say?
So what he said was that he was excited about the new product and service announcements coming in fall and into 2014.
Yeah, throughout 2014.
Right. And then an analyst, and I can't remember which one, went back to that point and asked for clarification, specifically asked, does this mean we will not be seeing any new products this spring or summer? To which Tim replied that he's very excited about what Apple has in the pipeline for this fall and into 2014.
Right, which sounds like we won't get any new products until the fall. It's really what it sounds like. But let's put that in context. That means no new products for a full year, because the last new products we got were in the fall of last year.
Yes. Last year was, what, October?
September.
September? Okay. It all bleeds together for me. Yeah, so last September, we ended up with pretty much across the board upgrades for everything that Apple makes.
Right.
And if that holds true, you're right. It will be a year before we get anything new.
Hence the flat quarter for this quarter, the June quarter.
Right, because people won't be lining up at their Apple store to get the new thing, whatever that is.
Right.
Because it won't be there.
Because it won't be there yet, right. And many had hoped that Apple would be accelerating its iPhone introductions to bring some kind of new device, especially some kind of new device, to either compete with the larger screen Android devices that are popular, or to boost sales in the emerging markets with a cheaper entry-level device.
And neither of those seem to be happening, at least right now.
Yeah, neither of them are going to happen this spring. I believe I believe fairly strongly that we would have heard different language from them if Apple was going to be introducing something before the fall, in particular the summer. And of course, when we say the summer, really we mean WWDC.
Right, which is June 10th through 14th. That was announced today.
Just today, yeah. But at the same time, Tim and Peter both, I'm probably going to write a column on this for either later this afternoon or more realistically Thursday morning. They both emphasized being excited about new services.
I found that very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, it's not like they've never mentioned new services before, but there was an emphasis. There was a quiet emphasis on services coming that, to me, so my takeaway from that, the premise that I'm working on in the back of my head for a column is that new services will be the story of 2013, not new hardware. So we're going to see something major introduced. And that's some aspect of that will probably be introduced at WWDC when I expect iOS 7 to be unveiled but not released.
Right. Yeah. iOS 7 and the next version of OS 10.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure Phil Schiller said that we would get previews of both.
Hmm.
I believe that's in one of their press releases.
Oh, okay.
And, excuse me, and then it wouldn't surprise me if we got a taste of what might be coming for new services.
Right. Well, you know, new services is, one of the biggest things that Wall Street wants to see is some kind of payment service. Because it has long been thought that Apple has all of the assets it needs to offer a compelling mobile payment solution that could finally make mobile payments a real thing. This includes, of course, the control of the hardware and the software. This includes the purchases of Authentic, the company.
Right.
Authentic does fingerprint recognition.
Right. Among other things that, yeah, they have other security things, all that could play into a new service.
Right. Like, and of course, something involving NFC. My personal take on NFC has been that it's out there, but no one does anything with it because Apple hasn't shown people how to do it right.
And I can see Apple doing an NFC thing only if they can come up with a better way to make it work. They also need to get pretty much everyone on board with their NFC because it's a very fractured market right now.
Yeah, exactly. Because Apple hasn't shown the industry how to do it. And it's always funny. You know, it's funny to me when Fandroids go, when iPhone 5 was released without NFC, Fandroids mocked that. And that's laughable to me because no one does anything with NFC. There are some really cool things you can do with NFC today, right now, on some Android devices, but very few people actually do them. Especially, I'm thinking of the tags that you can designate, and then have your phone react to.
Oh, right, yeah, that's actually kind of a cool thing.
It's a really cool thing, but very few people actually do it. And so, I don't. That is probably a new service that Apple is talking about, some kind of mobile payment thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I am. How about if I say I'm optimistically skeptical about Apple coming up with a new mobile payment system?
Really?
Yeah, it's just right now everything just seems so up in the air.
Let's bet. Let's wager, sir. I'm rubbing my hands greedily.
Of course you are. All right, so a dollar says no Apple Mobile Payment Service this fall.
All right, done. That's our wager. I think we will have a mobile payment solution from Apple this fall.
And I'm very leery of that. Apparently, I'm leery to the tune of $1.
Apparently. I forget, by the way. I know I have a running bet with John. Didn't I even that out?
You may have even... Look, I'm not sure.
I know I owed John a steak dinner because I had some kind of prediction wrong. Oh, it was the no Verizon iPhone before the iPhone 4S.
Right.
And that was my bet with him. And he said that it was coming, and he was right because the Verizon deal got announced in the fall, and then the iPhone 4S didn't actually get announced until the fall. Oh, the spring, I'm sorry. So Verizon announced the iPhone deal. Apple and Verizon announced it in the spring. And then the iPhone 4S itself was delayed until the fall. And that was why I got that one wrong. But I think I made another bet with him and evened that out.
I know you made another bet with him. I don't recall if it's evened out. And I feel bad saying I can't remember what the bet was.
Yes, it is your job to keep track of my wagers, my proposition bets.
Yes. And I think that's actually on my business card, Managing Editor Tracker of Brian's Wagers.
Yes, that is true. Nonetheless, $1 this fall. So if it's announced in the summer, I'm assuming that means I win.
Now you're adding new twists to this. This is why I usually don't enter into wagers with you, because it starts off simple, and the next thing I know, it's become this complex thing.
Man, with proposition, but you have to cover your bases in the proposition bet thing, because you know you get it wrong, and then there's all kinds of hurt feelings later.
Now, my thing was no service this fall.
All right. So if it's announced this summer for a fall release, does that?
If it's announced this summer for a fall release, then you still win.
Okay. All right. Excellent. All right. So nonetheless, we have that to look forward to. Hooray. Do you want to talk about the 5-inch iPhone stuff?
Yes, we should talk about the 5-inch iPhone.
Was it?
And
you hesitated.
Your analogy to was it Gallo Wines?
Paul Masson.
That's right. So okay, so for everyone playing at home that hasn't had a chance to check out everything Apple said during the earnings report, at one point Tim Cook was asked about making iPhones with larger screens.
Yeah, let me read that question.
Okay.
It's from Ben Reitzes from Barclays. He said, I just wanted to get your reaction to what you thought of the 5-inch phone market at this time versus 3 months ago, and if anything has changed in your view as to that market and its place in the smartphone world versus your 4-inch product, all of which is a roundabout way of asking...
Are you going to make a 5-inch iPhone?
Yeah. and Tim's response started off with, Ben, that's a good question. And I've noticed that Tim only says that about things that he seems very keen to talk about.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, that's one of Tim's tells.
It is. It's totally one of Tim's tells. Because, you know, Tim and Peter and possibly the board are possibly, I'm sure, surely the PR department, they sit around. They've got a list of things that they want to talk about in these earnings calls. There's the stuff that they announce, but then there's the stuff that they want to talk about by way of answering analyst questions. And I'm sure they've got a bullet point list, and the conference calls don't end until that bullet point list has been addressed in their mind. That's my take on how that works.
See, I always thought there's a little bit of a lottery in there. They have all the bullet points, and if the analysts ask the right questions, they'll get the answers.
Yeah,
and if they don't, they just miss out.
Yeah, that's the case for some of it. But some of the things that they talk about are things that they want to get out there. And this, of course, is especially true right now, where Apple is everybody's whipping boy instead of everybody's hero.
Right.
There are absolutely things that Apple wants to communicate both to analysts and to the wider investing world as a whole. And this is one of those things where I believe that Apple wants to offer clarity. So the rest of Tim's response was, my view continues to be that iPhone 5 has the absolute best display in the industry. And we always strive to create the very best display for our customers. Some customers value large screen size. Others value other factors such as resolution, color quality, white balance, brightness, reflectivity, screen longevity, power consumption, portability, compatibility, such a long list, I can't even get it out, compatibility of apps, many things. And then he finished, and this was the killer line. This is the point. He said, quote, our competitors have made some significant trade-offs in many of these areas in order to ship a larger display. We would not ship a larger display iPhone while those trade-offs exist.
And at that point, he could have followed it up with boom. Because that's the point where all of Apple's competitors should now be going, crap, Apple actually is working on a bigger iPhone.
Right. And of course Apple's been working on it. I mean, that's...
Of course. Yes, of course.
I mean, the market has spoke. I mean, so it's interesting. Some people say, oh my God, Apple doesn't have a big screen iPhone. They're done for. They can't innovate and they suck. And that's just ridiculous.
Which is why they made only $9.5 billion profit last quarter.
Correct. Clearly they're doomed. And at the same time, Samsung outsells Apple in the smartphone market, but Samsung does not sell more of its phablets than Apple sells iPhone.
God, I hate that word.
I love that word. It's funny to me that it puts you on tilt so much.
Oh,
makes me just wait for my next title. It makes me want to use this word more and more and more because it drives you nuts.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But anyhow, continue.
Do you hear this?
Yeah, and I know what you just spelled.
No, that was me pushing your buttons is what it was.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, you can push my buttons by what you just spelled.
So, what's the point here? People make a big deal about these big screen phones, yet Apple is still selling lots of iPhones. Not everybody wants a big phone. Some people want a big phone. Apple needs to address that market, but not everybody wants a big phone, or Apple wouldn't be selling any iPhones.
That's a really good point. How many did they sell in the quarter?
37 million.
That's right, 37 million.
37 million phones they sold, more than they did last year for the same quarter. Although, obviously, growth, I think it was 34 or 35 million that they sold last year. They actually beat expectations on iPhone sales. Mm-hmm. And this was when everybody was expecting an Apple miss. So my point is that Apple needs a larger iPhone because there are some people that want it, but there are plenty of people who don't, and people should not get lost in projecting their own desires on everybody because it's not the way it works.
That's a really good point. That's not the way it works. But if you look at the way many people react about well, pretty much any product, they assume the only way for a product to be good and for a company to be successful is if that company does exactly what they want.
Right. Absolutely. And that's not to say Apple is clearly losing out on some sales. The Galaxy S3 has been a very big success. It's not as big a success as the iPhone, but it's been a very big success. The Galaxy Note 2 has been a success. They don't sell a lot of those things, but they do sell a lot of them, but they don't sell anywhere near as many as they sell with the Galaxy S3. And the Galaxy S4 is probably going to be a very, very successful device too. As a matter of fact, if Samsung can make enough of them, my personal prediction is that the Galaxy S4 will outsell iPhone the first quarter of availability.
That would be really impressive.
Well, they did it one quarter before, and that was when everybody was waiting for the iPhone 5.
Right.
And that was with the GS3, obviously.
Right. And it looks like now we're waiting till this fall for whatever the next iPhone will be, which would give Samsung a complete quarter without any new iPhone to compete with.
Yeah, in the September quarter itself, depending on, like, let's say that Apple does what it did last year, which is introduce a new iPhone at the end of September, so they get some of those sales in the September quarter. If Apple can make enough of those to actually meet all demand during that quarter, Samsung might not outsell the iPhone. If that's not the case, I believe in the September quarter that Samsung, the GS4 will outsell the iPhone. That's my prediction.
You know, I'm kind of inclined to agree with you simply because we don't have a new iPhone coming for a while.
Right. Yep. So, and yeah, for a while. We say for a while. It'll be a year since the previous one was introduced.
True, which is basically what Apple had been doing anyhow. It's just in context of the window of time we have right now leading up to when that would happen, there's a nice window of time that Samsung can take advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, so the GS4 is supposed to be released in May. I think it's going to be delayed. We're already seeing some reports of it being delayed right now.
Right.
I think it's probably not really going to ship until sometime in June. I think it's a fantastic time for Samsung to release this device because they do get a whole quarter of being at the tail end of Apple's own cycle. It's a very smart move on their part. But let's get back to what Tim said. So
right,
he makes these arguments. He lists all these things, and he says that Apple, as I put it, you know, channeling Orson Welles in his Palmasan commercials, Apple will sell no large screen iPhone before its time. And if you accept Tim's assertion that the entirety of that list is important, it makes sense for Apple to wait. Because he's true. He said that the iPhone 5 has the best screen, the best display in the industry. That is absolutely the case, unless you want a large screen.
Yes, unless you want a large screen.
Yeah, when you take resolution, color quality, white balance, brightness, reflectivity, screen longevity, power consumption, portability, and compatibility of apps, if you take all of that giant list and say that the entirety of that list is, in fact, the most important thing, it makes sense for Apple to wait. If, on the other hand, all you care about is having a big, fat phone and a large display, Apple is obviously making a mistake by waiting. That's not how Apple does it. Apple's going to meet the entirety of that list. And I think that means that we're not getting this large 5-inch iPhone until 2014.
I would be stunned if Apple released a bigger screen iPhone this year.
Yeah, I think this year we're going to see two devices introduced. We're going to see an inexpensive device aimed at the BRIC markets. That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Mm-hmm. And this is the fabled inexpensive entry level device for these markets where subsidies aren't the norm and people don't make as much money as the developed world. And then we're going to see some kind of iPhone 5S, which is an iteration of the current device, probably with the fingerprint technology and the NFC and the mobile payments and stuff.
See, I'm still not even sold NFC will be in there.
I think we'll see NFC this time around. I think that what they've been waiting for in the NFC is mobile payments. I think that Apple did not want to introduce NFC for the sake of NFC, and they wanted to have a compelling use for it, and that compelling use is going to be mobile payments. And that's what they've been waiting on, and that assuming that, that's actually ready, we're going to see it with the next iteration of the phone.
If they have that ready, then sure, I can see Apple doing some sort of NFC thing. But I'm not convinced it has to be NFC technology for the mobile payments.
There's a really good case for NFC in terms of convenience, and in terms of actually making it work for the vendors, for the retailers, and for us, the user.
Sure. Yeah. Assuming that everyone has compatible equipment.
That's what she said.
That's exactly what she said. Yep.
Yay.
Yeah. So the problem with NFC right now is that you have to have the right phone when you go into a store, and that store has to have the right NFC system to work with your phone. And then you can actually use the system.
Well, that's the deal. The NFC devices that have been released for Android are so fractured that there's no compelling case to be made for everybody to jump on board. Even Google's system, all phones don't even support the Google Wallet.
Right.
But Apple has that control. This is the ubiquity of the Apple ecosystem that comes into play. And Apple can make something like this happen, and the rest of the world can actually follow along on whatever standards Apple establishes.
That's true. They can do that. Or they could come up with something completely different that doesn't require NFC. And this wouldn't be the first time that Apple has completely shunned a technology that the rest of the world says, oh, you have to include. Because they did this with Blu-ray.
It's true.
And now we're at a point, really, where it's hard for me to come up with a compelling reason to put a Blu-ray player in a computer.
Yeah, I would temper that with, it's easier to ignore the shortcoming in Macs. Because I want to be able to watch Blu-ray movies on my Mac. I really do. But that's besides that point. Let's not get off track.
It's funny that you say that, because we're so lucky if we ever do stay on track.
We're lucky if we have a track.
Yeah, I'm actually looking around right now trying to see if there's one nearby, and I got nothing, man.
Fair enough. By the way, can I read the Orson Welles dialogue?
I would love for you to read the Orson Welles dialogue.
I wish I could do an Orson Welles voice, but I can't. But it's so funny when you actually pay attention to the words he's saying. He's speaking in all these sentence fragments. He goes, this is the Palmasan. So if you're old like me and Jeff, or older, you'll remember these commercials really, really well. If you're young, you probably have no idea what we're talking about, but
they're on YouTube probably.
Yeah, they're on YouTube all over the place. And Funny or Die has a bunch of outtakes that are funny also, but whatever. It took Beethoven 4 years to write that symphony. This is referring to a symphony that was playing at the beginning of the commercial. Some things can't be rushed. Good music and good wine. Palmasan's Emerald Dry, delicious white wine. Palmasan's wine tastes so good because they're made with such care. What Palmasan himself said nearly a century ago is still true today. We will sell no wine before its time. It's a
string of sound bites.
It's a string of sound bites. He delivers it with that Orson Welles gravitas, and it works when he says it. But when you're just reading it, it's kind of a weird string of sound bites.
Yeah, when you read it, and you end, the first thing I want to ask is, did you have a stroke?
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. So, Tim Cook is letting the world know, do not look for a 5-inch iPhone from us until 2014. That's my read on that. I believe, I think it was... It was Ben Rietzes who asked that original question. He put out a research note today where he said, see, Apple is happy with its screen size for the iPhone 5. This comment by Apple backs our view that a larger iPhone is in development, but not going to a launch until the June quarter of next year, which is 2014. So I don't know. I think that's a solid interpretation of that particular bit of code.
Yeah. Well, and that particular bit of code. Okay. So one sentence is all it took for Tim Cook to make me flip immediately from Apple is not going to make a bigger screen iPhone ever to Apple has a 5-inch iPhone coming.
Really? Were you still at the point where you didn't think one was coming?
Yep.
Yeah, man, really?
Really.
How can they pop? I'm going to repeat what I said earlier. Clearly, not everybody wants a big smartphone. But a lot of people do, and I don't think Apple can ignore the market. How do you think that Apple could ignore that market?
They could ignore the market through all of the other things that they're bringing to the table with the iPhone, and one of the features of the iPhone, I think, has always been it's a one-handed device, and where it stands right now with the iPhone 5, this. I call it a one-handed device, but the more I use it, the more I realize I'm having to be a little wishy-washy on my definition of a one-handed device. At the current screen size on the iPhone 5, I do have to jockey this around in my hand a little bit to make it work as a one-handed device. If it is any bigger in any dimension, this now becomes a two-handed device for me. And based on that, I've had a very hard time picturing Apple releasing an iPhone with a bigger screen. I've really felt this is pretty much as big as they can go before they have an iPad mini. And oh wait, they have one of those.
Yeah, so, there's a little bit of room.
Yeah, well,
and, you know, and when it comes to I'm actually quite happy with I'm still on an iPhone 4S. And, of course, the iPhone 5 isn't much taller than the 4S, but from a one-handed, you know, so when I'm writing, I'm usually listening to music through my iPhone, and I end up constantly manipulating my iPhone with my left hand while I'm writing, especially when I'm working on my novel.
Mm-hmm.
And, So I'm totally with you. I like that size. I'm happy with the fact that I can manipulate the iPhone with one hand and would probably buy that sort of device in the future as well. But when I'm in a car and I'm using my iPhone as GPS, I would love a bigger screen. I would love a fatter screen.
All right. So for that, what I would love to see is better car integration with the iPhone, where my iPhone links up to the car and my bigger screen for navigation is built into the dashboard, not into my iPhone.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that would be ideal. But that's kind of, all car manufacturers aren't going to do that, and not everybody can buy a new car.
Right, and not everyone gets a car with a built-in GPS or satellite radio or right. Whatever. And I totally get that even though a GPS is pretty much mandatory for some people in their cars, it is a luxury item. So
true.
I don't expect that every car should have to have a setup that allows
to
do this.
That's a great point. That's a great point. But that would be ideal. What you described would certainly be ideal, and I'll back you up on that. But, all right. Well, I think we've beaten that one to death. There's the cash allocation.
Yes, they ratcheted that up. They doubled what they're investing into their allocation program.
Right.
So the dividend that shareholders get is going up by 15%. So that takes it to 305, I believe.
305 a share, up from 265.
Right. And then Apple is investing an additional
$60 billion.
Was it $60 billion? Yes, into their stock buyback program.
Right, which makes sense because the company is undervalued.
Right, and so they snatch up all that stock. They're investing in their own company, and that stock they just never release back out to the world again.
Right. So I think it was Maynard he estimated that Apple would be pulling 100 million shares off the market. There's a little under a billion shares right now, or a little over, actually, a little over 900 million shares. So depending on what happens with the stock during the course of the three-year buyback program, Apple will probably pull about 100 million shares off the market. And that helps shareholders because, so your earnings per share increase because there are fewer shares, but also right. because it's a supply and demand thing. If people want Apple stock and there's less stock on the market, well, then obviously the per share price rises.
Right. And so that's a good thing for investors. It's a good thing for Apple. And one thing that Apple said that they're doing as part of this is they are incurring debt, and Apple has been debt free for years.
Right. But,
and the but is really important. So please continue.
I think I interrupted you.
Oh, that's all right. Oh, okay. So we will continue to interrupt each other. The but is important, and choosing to take on debt as opposed to repatriating money from overseas accounts will actually cost Apple less. So it was the more fiscally responsible move to say we will take out a loan to buy back this stock as opposed to just going to one of their accounts overseas and bringing money back into the United States where they will be hit with all kinds of taxes.
Right. And on top of that, money has never been cheaper to borrow, especially when you have money.
Right.
Apple is going to be paying almost no interest on this money. So this really is the smart thing for them to do from an accountant standpoint.
Right. So Apple will be taking on debt, and it's the smart fiscal move, and they will be buying back a buttload of their own stock, and shareholders are getting back more money as part of their dividend, and their stock value will probably go up because there's less stock out there.
Yeah,
so this looks like a really good deal for investors.
Yeah, it is. It's a smart thing, and it's certainly the right thing to do. I was pleased to see the scope of the plan, and it still leaves Apple with more money than you could shake a stick at.
Yes, it does.
So, I mean, you know, Apple can still do anything it wants. It could go buy any company that it wanted. It could, you know, it can build whatever it wants to build. It can, you know, actually it could make its spaceship headquarters an actual spaceship. I mean, it's the
I would get a job at Apple.
Oh,
if
yeah.
It was really a spaceship.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That'd be totally cool. So this returns more money to shareholders. It addresses that Wall Street and shareholder concern, and it does so in a way that benefits shareholders and is going to benefit shareholders over the long term. And it does so in a way that doesn't hurt Apple's ability to use its money to do whatever it wants. So, you know, hooray all the way around.
Yes, and the timing for the announcement was excellent because Apple, had they not had this to go along with the no products till fall implication and what was the other thing? No products till fall.
That's the big thing. Oh, the flat guidance for June.
And flat guidance. Thank you. I knew there's the other thing. I think analysts and investors would have kind of freaked out.
Absolutely.
But then this nice little package of, hey, and we're making what you have more valuable, was dropped in their laps as well. That was a really smart move on Apple's part.
Absolutely it was. And the time, you know, this is why they waited until now to announce this. I'm sure that they've had this plan in not in place, but ready to go for a while, but they wanted to announce it now because they knew what they were going to be announcing with the quarter results. So
right,
it was all done well, and it's good news.
Yeah. So don't let anyone tell you that Apple has lost its ability to present their case exactly the way they want you to see it.
Oh man, I'll tell you that right now. I think Apple has lost control of its news cycle. I think that's been the big thing.
That's not the same thing. They've totally lost control of their news cycle, and they need to start working on getting it back. But when they give you information, they are masters at giving it to you the way they want you to have it.
All right, fair enough. I'll accept that modification.
Okay.
I'm sure that you were waiting with bated breath for me to do that.
No, actually, I was not. But luckily, I'm quick on my toes.
Yes, you are. Twinkle Toes. Jeff Twinkle Toes Gamut.
That's going to get me dates.
Yes, it will. All right. So can we take just a couple of minutes here and talk about a little science fiction annoyance of mine?
Well, since we've already established that when we do have rails, we don't stay on them.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Defiance. It's a new show on Sci-Fi.
Right. And since I cut my cable cord a while ago, I don't have Sci-Fi, so you will have to be my eyes for the show. But continue.
First of all, I like the show. We saw the pilot last week, and we saw episode 2 on Monday, so 2 days ago as of this recording. And I like the show. It's a post-apocalyptic thing. It's set in, I think, 2037, thereabouts. And aliens have come to Earth, and there's some kind of problem, and there's crashing of spaceships, and there's all these new alien races on Earth competing with what's left of humanity because of the cataclysmic fall involved with the arrival of the aliens. And also with the aliens having, and I quote, terraformed the Earth.
And when you first mentioned the terraforming, excuse me, to me, my assumption was that you were going to tell me that this story takes place in the distant past or in the distant future, when Earth's environment is radically different from what it is today, and so they're
explaining how we got to the Earth of today.
Exactly, something like that.
Yep, that's not the case.
And so instead, they're terraforming Terra.
Yes, Terra. So just in case you don't happen to be a big sci-fi nerd or a speaker of Latin, I'm one of those two things. I'll let you figure out which. Terraform means to make something Earth-like, because terra is the Latin name for the Earth, and form means pretty much to form. So to terraform something is to make it Earth-like. So this show has aliens coming and terraforming Earth to make it not the Earth.
So, un-terraforming.
Yes.
So, it's the 7-Up of terraforming.
Yes! It is the 7-Up of terraforming. It is the un-terraform. And I love you for coming up with that.
Oh, I love you too. Hugs all around.
Oh, yay! And this just drives me nuts. Terraforming is, this is something that's a staple of science fiction, but it's right. not like science fiction guys made this up. They got the theory from scientists who were looking at the idea of going to other planets and how would we be able to live on other planets? Well, you live on other planets by making them Earth-like.
Right. Yeah. You have to figure out how to modify the environment on whatever planet you go to so that it becomes habitable to humans.
Right. You make it Earth-like. You terraform.
And it sounds like what you're describing is that humans live here because it's the near future, and they are living here in the ecosystem that's available while aliens show up and try and take over. So it's already terra.
Yes. They are, as you said, they are unterraforming. They're actually making the Earth un-Earth-like because the last time I checked, the Earth is pretty Earth-like.
Yeah, it has been for quite a while.
So they're making it un-Earth-like. They're making it more like their native environment. So terraforming is not the right word. And this science fiction show that actually, it's otherwise like super science fiction-y. It's just like, it is such a really cool science fiction environment. It's such a cool science fiction premise. And yet they have this little thing. It's like they didn't bother to run this by the science fiction nerds, or if they did, they didn't listen to the science fiction nerds when the science fiction nerd said, excuse me, I don't think you mean to use the word terraform there. I believe that it should be. I don't know how it happened, but it drives me nuts. I like this show a lot, but every time they talk, I hear them talking about alien terraformers, it sends me into an apoplectic rage.
So is it possible, and keep in mind, I have not seen the show since I don't have Sci-Fi Channel. Uh-huh. Is it possible that these aliens come from a planet that's called Terra?
No.
Oh.
I like it, though. I like it. I don't know. Somewhat, like one of the writers had this vague idea that terraforming means transforming. And ran with that rather than actually looking it up, see what it means. Nonetheless, the show is actually fun.
So,
I like it.
Terraformers, more than meet the eye?
Yes. It's a good show. I enjoy it. I recommend it. If you like science fiction or if you like post-apocalyptic settings, you should absolutely check it out. And then you can laugh at me every time they say alien terraformers and just picture me going into an apoplectic rage.
Or if it now bothers you to no end, you can blame Brian.
Yes. It's alternately, you now have something you can push my buttons with. I can say Fablet, and you can say...
And I'll say, let's terraform. Let's go to California and terraform.
All right. Thank you for letting me go off on my little science fiction rant.
No problem. Matter of fact, you know, when we go... We'll go out to the desert... And we'll terraform the desert. You can keep track of everything we're doing on your phablet.
Excellent. I like it.
God, I hate that word.
I like that word. It's a very useful word to me.
Yeah, but not for the reasons it ought to be useful.
Why? It's perfectly descriptive. You know exactly what it means.
No, it's useful for you in the sense that you can put me on tilt with it.
No, it's useful because it makes sense. You hear the word phablet, you know what it means. It's a phone tablet.
Terraform.
Alien terraform. That's
Terraform.
Yeah, you need the whole thing there. All right. I think that we have done enough damage here.
So much so we might have to terraform.
Maybe.
All right. Well, before I cause you to have like a stroke or something, we should probably wrap up the show, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter and on app.net. My name on both is Jay Gamut.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TMO Brian. That's Brian with a Y. On app.net. App.net. Did I just say that?
Yeah. Yeah, you totally said app.net.
Oh, man. You cannot let me out of the house. You can follow me on app.net at Brian Chaffin. still Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.